You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staff editor at IndyCornrows.com, the SB Nation. Been writing there for a while, and I'm also been your host for the entire 2017-18 season of the Locked On Pacers podcast. On today's show, it is just me. There's no Tony East. Tony will not be back until Wednesday when we'll do our weekly show. He had some conflicts on Monday and Tuesday. That's why he will not be on today or tomorrow's show. On Tuesday, we have a special guest to preview the Warriors game. You'll find out who that is on Tuesday when you download the podcast, or you can check us out on Twitter. We'll tweet it out after it's recorded on Monday evening. Today, I'm going to start with the Pacers' 113-107 win over the Miami Heat that clinched them a playoff spot for the third year in a row. And that's where I'm going to start today's show. Coming into the season, ESPN predicted the Pacers to win 31 games. I believe the over-under was 31.5 for Indiana. I was bullish on that. I thought 28 wins, 20 to 30 was reasonable. High end, they win 35 games and make the 8 seed. That was when I thought the East would stink. The East has been better than I thought it was going to be. And then some of the players. Oladipo, I thought high end, he was a 20-point-a-game player. I never thought he'd be the player he is right now. I just didn't see that before, but he clearly made huge strides in the offseason. Turner has been really great of late, but he's also been just, you know, and has been up and down all year, but he's been really solid. It's a bonus. I was a lot better than I thought he was going to be. And really, the team together, they fit in a way that I never thought was possible. You know, I thought Kevin Pritchard knew what he was doing. Maybe he signed, you know, he tried to change the Pacers from this team that had a lot of, like, clunky guys who couldn't stretch the floor to really just kind of a spread-out team. But I never thought it would work this well together, and it for sure has. I mean, Bojan, Collison, combined with Vic's improved play, combined with Thad Young's back to his three-point shooting at least a decent level, with Turner when he's on fire, is really a lethal stretch offense. All five guys can shoot threes. It's scary. And you saw it against the Heat when the finally was clicking at the end of the game. You know, you had the double-edged sword of, oh, Debo can score, or Collison can hit the three pretty well. I mean, Collison is leading the league in three-point shooting percentage, so he's been awesome. But I just didn't expect this team to fit together this well. And really, it's something of, like, the sum of their parts is greater than their individual parts. You know, I think each player is more valuable to the Pacers than it is to any other team because it fits a piece of the puzzle that together makes this team, you know, a 43-win team right now. I think he's going to win 47 to 48 games. Probably won't hit 50. I think the Warriors games will decide that one, depending on who's healthy for the Warriors. But this team's going to win 45, I'd say 45 to 48 games, which is better than last year's Pacers, who had arguably a top 10-15 player. I think Depot's becoming now a top 10-15 player. But, you know, George is a consistent, you know, guy who's been in the playoffs consistently. And this team is better than that team by a mile. They're just so much better. They do everything just a little better. And I just have to give props to McMillan, to Pritchard, to Depot, to every guy on this team that put together, because it's been amazing to watch. And I really actually hope they decide to run this team back next year. I hope they make a nice playoff run. I hope maybe they win a series and go to seven, another one or something like that, because I think this team deserves to have another year together because they've looked so well and the chemistry is so good. And if Turner doesn't get hurt for the couple times he did and he plays like 70 games next season, then you add Robinson to that. This team has a real chance to just develop into, I think, one of the top three teams in the Eastern Conference. Obviously, depending on where the LeBron's go, but still, a top three, top four team consistently in the Eastern Conference for next three or four seasons, which is awesome. You know, that's what the Pacers were 3 or 4 years ago. You got to let these guys kind of grow together. So I'm excited. I hope they run it back next year. We'll see what happens. But the Pacers won today's Miami Heat game against the Heat, 113-107 in overtime. Look at some stats. Going into the overtime, obviously, pretty even. Really, the Pacers were going to win this game at the free throw line, where they shot 17 of 21, and mainly it's because of volume, not because of the percentage-wise. I mean, if you look at all the stats, look on the stat sheets, they're pretty even with the Heat in every category, except the Pacers made 6 more free throws by shooting 7 more. That's where the difference came in this game. That's where it's why they were in an overtime, because three-point range, they shot worse. They made less threes. They, even on rebounds, basically, I believe it ended up being, a 12-rebound Pacers win, but they, I think it was only 2 heading into overtime. I think overtime it sort of flipped. But turnovers the same, three-point percentage, like I said, relatively the same, shooting percentage, relatively the same. Nothing too major there. It really was won at the free throw line. And that seems to be kind of a theme with this Pacer team. They seem to, a lot of games they win closer because they're getting fouled more than the other team. They're creating more contact at the end, you know, at the end of games. I mean, that play by Turner where he got fouled by D-Wade at the end of the game where he should have hit both free throws, but he didn't. But that was a great play. Turner knew that Wade was guarding him badly. You know, Turner knew he couldn't get the shot off, but he knew he could draw the foul. Great awareness by Turner. I've really been just impressed by Turner's end-of-game awareness and sort of taking the next level. You know, I thought he'd always be kind of a scared end-of-game player, but he's sort of taking that next level where he's not afraid to have the ball in his hands at the end of a game. The first thing you got to do also in this game is just shout out Thaddeus Young, who had, I would say, his best game of the season. At least you look at that fourth quarter and overtime particularly. Young was 10 of 16 for 22 points, but everything was going right for him. I know he should have got the offensive foul call on James Johnson, which would have won him the game. That's beside the point. He had a really nice dunk in overtime that I liked. He was playing really well in that, really, the whole second half. He had a 22-9 game, close to a season high in points. I believe his season high is 26 in points, but he's not far behind there. The next player I got to shout out is Darren Collison. Collison, in, I believe, the fourth quarter overtime had 8 points. He hit two huge threes either in overtime and that nice little step back two over Olynyk that really just sealed the game. And he sort of became the guy over Oladipo at the end of games. I mean, they ran that great play. Shout out to Nate Millen for that one, but a great play where Collison and Thad Young bunched up on the right side of the court. Depot had the ball in his hand. Depot kind of cut to the rim, drew the defender in. Collison took a step out. Young set a pick, and all of a sudden, Collison was wide open in the corner for a three where he has been basically knocked down. You know, I know he didn't have a great three-point shooting game today. He went 2 for 2 3, but overall shooting in the first half, I knew he was 0 for 7, but he's a 45% three-point shooter, which is leads the NBA, I think, right now. He was awesome. And I think it's amazing how I've now talked about two players before talking about Victor Oladipo, three if you count Turner because of his end-of-game thing. But Oladipo had 23 points, okay shooting night. He continues to struggle from three. Hopefully that will turn around with the playoff times, but, you know, Depot does everything, little thing right, you know. 23 points, five assists, two rebounds, three steals, you know, making plays consistently on defense. But really the heroes of this game were honestly Thad Young and Darren Collison. Bojan finally got his shooting back. Been a couple games now, but he's sort of that little slump he had. He's come out the other side of that, which is good. He's not having these long stretch slumps like he did all of January. And then off the bench, you know, I really liked Glenn Robinson. He had probably his best game of the season, I would say. He looked like he had a little more, you know, athleticism going. There was a fast break play where I thought he was going to dunk it. Instead, he laid it in. But still, Robinson has his athleticism back. Really, it looks like it. And I don't know if that means anything for the playoffs. I don't know if he gets into the rotation or not. I would doubt he does right now. Hopefully, you know, if Sabonis does come back, plays the last seven games, whatever it is, I assume that sort of bumps Robinson because the way Booker is playing and things like that. But we'll see. We'll see. I'm going to hit Trevor Booker before I hit Domantas Sabonis. Booker has been really well for the Pacers since he signed here. You know, I was kind of whatever on his signing. It was kind of an insurance policy. It was good insurance policy. He's been playing a little bit of center at times because of Sabonis' injury. And then when Turner got hurt, it was just a good insurance policy. Another good move by Kevin Pritchard because ultimately he was there in case somebody got hurt and they've had injuries. And he's been a decent player. I wouldn't say he's been, you know, otherworldly, but he's been what you want him to be and not any worse than you want him to be. He's been pretty decent in offense. He had 6 points tonight, but he's had a 10-point game against New Orleans. And he's just been, you know, not a terrible player, not a negative. Better than Al Jefferson, because Jefferson, if he's not shooting, is really just a huge negative. Booker, at least, is a pretty decent rebounder and has got some more speed than Jefferson. Can kind of run the floor a little better than Jefferson, but props to Booker. I don't know. Again, I don't know if he'll get any playoff minutes. When it comes to playoff times, it might get shrunk to, you know, like an 8 or 9 man rotation, depending on, you know, like I said, it's the five starters, Stevenson, Joseph, probably Booker and Sabonis. My guess would be the nine. There probably won't be any Glenn Robinson, but we'll see what McMillan does. Obviously, Sabonis has got to get healthy, and that's what I want to talk about next. Domantas Sabonis was supposed to play in the Pacers game against Miami Heat today. He obviously did not. He rolled his ankle in warmups before the game. He was basically doing some kind of inside kind of floater layup drill, whatever you want to call it. He was sort of hook-shotting it, and he took a step back and then rolled his ankle off the ball boy. You can't hate on the ball boy for anything. You know, I think the ball boy was supposed to be there. It wasn't like in the way or anything. It's just what happened. It's one of those fluke things where it just stinks. Bones then was visibly angry. He slammed his hand into the chair walking in the locker room. He was limping a little bit, but seemed to kind of get his, you know, didn't seem like a terrible ankle injury. I think it just was a frustrating thing, like, dang, I can't play today. I don't know if he'll play Tuesday. I don't know if he'll play Thursday. We'll find out. Obviously, McMillan will probably update the media sometime this week. My guess is it'll be an update on Monday. I don't know if they're going to practice. I believe they're probably traveling tomorrow. They probably won't get to practice, so we probably won't find out about Sabonis until Tuesday. But we'll see what happens. I think the Pacers probably need him to come back if they really want to have a shot at getting a top four seed. So if we do a quick standings check-in, you look at it. The Pacers, with today's win, I believe pushes them to a dead heat tie with the Philadelphia 76ers for the four seed in these conference and a game and a half back of the Cavs, who played today and won. The Sixers, I believe, do not play today. The Sixers are on a different every other day schedule than the Pacers, but they also have played two less games than them. So that's good or bad. The Pacers have one more win and one more loss than the Sixers. They also own the tiebreaker. It puts them two games ahead of the Wizards. Another probably good thing. They don't own the tiebreaker against them. The win also gives them the tiebreaker over the Heat, or at least ties them, so it comes into other tiebreakers, and the Pacers, I believe, would win those tiebreakers. Basically, they own tiebreakers against the Cavs, Sixers, Bucks, and Heat, so four of the five teams that they could possibly end up tied with, which is a good thing. But to get to that four seed, probably need to win seven of the last eight, six of the last eight. I mean, the Pacers have a more brutal schedule than anybody else, but they probably need to close out their last eight games, I would say, with seven or eight of the wins. You know, I don't think they'll go perfect, but seven is probably where they would be enough to get at least the four seed. You know, we're shooting for the three, but the Cavs have a really easy schedule, so I don't know about that. But yeah, let's say they win seven of their last eight games. They play the Warriors twice. They play Denver. They're definitely going to need Sabonis at some point in the West Coast road swing. You know, I think of winnable games, they should beat Charlotte twice. They should beat Sacramento. They probably should beat the Clippers. But then everything else is up for grabs. It all depends on who's healthy on each team. You know, the Toronto rest their starters at that point. I think Toronto, at that point in their schedule, they place, you know, back-to-back at some point that week, that last week, because they're a game behind everybody else. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But hopefully Sabonis' injury isn't too setbacky. Hopefully maybe it sets him back a game. He plays Tuesday. I think worst case, setback, plays Thursday. But we'll find out, like I said, on probably Tuesday when they do some kind of walkthrough early before game warm-ups. We'll find out. And maybe he'll play Tuesday. Hope he does. That would be huge. But if he doesn't, not the end of the world. Like I said, Booker's been playing pretty well. The last thing I want to talk about is Darren Collison basically playing the entire overtime. I think he played the entire overtime. And the Pacers not going with Corey Joseph. So in regulation, the Pacers were subbing Joseph and Collison at times. I believe Collison didn't play the last minute per se. But they were subbing to get some offense with Collison and defense with Joseph. But they decided in overtime to just let Collison roll. It paid off. Obviously, Collison had 8 points in overtime. He was incredible. He was a difference maker, really. And that kind of brings this kind of dynamic for the Pacers is, what's more important, defense or offense? Because with Collison out there, the floor is just a little more stretched. So Collison's numbers-wise this season, 49.9 from the field, 45 from three, 87 from the line, almost 50-40-90. If you get close to rounding, you get 50, 45, and 88. So close. I mean, that's how good he's been this year. Doesn't quite have the per-game numbers up there, but just that threat kind of changes things. Where Joseph is more like a mid-30% three-point shooter, which is just a little less of a threat. But the problem is on the other end of the floor, Joseph is a much better defender, and Collison can kind of be taken advantage of at times. But like you saw in overtime, Collison playing on the offensive end was probably, let's say, a +8 or +9 point positive, and only like a -2 or -3 points on the defensive end. It's that kind of push-pull dynamic. Well, it'll be important in the playoffs, because as you get to the playoffs and you play in a series and you get into the fourth or fifth game, I imagine teams are going to start double-teaming Oladipo, trying to just force the ball out of his hands. And if Collison can be that number two threat, almost like Turner can, if Collison can prepare, be that threat from the three-point line and then Turner can be it from down low, that would at least prevent teams from just doing that all the time. Because ultimately, I think Depot is still their clutchest player. I mean, when he's getting going to the rim, when he gets separation on that pick and roll, he's almost a stopper when he's going to the rim. It's just whether the team decides out of the pick to just double swap him. And if they could do that, they can try to set up a play, you know, on the double team to get the ball to Turner and kick it out to Collison or something like that. But if they have more of a threat on the offensive end, their offense is going to be better. But then you have to kind of counter that with they need to make plays to win games on the defensive end. And that's been a staple of the Pacers team, is winning close games. I believe they were They are 10-1 in games decided by 3 points or less. They almost won today, but obviously they didn't. It ended up being a 6-point victory, but they made the nice play at the end of the game. I still think Thaddeus Young should not have been called for a foul on that play, and that's ridiculous. They should have won the game by 1 point. Whatever. Not a big deal. Sorry, I keep getting on that because it's just bothering me right now that he got called for a foul and the guy just shoved him. But that's kind of the dynamic. Is when they want to play Joseph, when they want to play Collison. We saw part of the year they decided they really cared about the defensive end. They were going to play Joseph a lot. Then obviously Collison missed that time, and Joseph played all the time. So it's just kind of this weird kind of dynamic offense, defense that you'll have to watch because it will matter in the playoffs. It will matter, especially if it goes against the 76ers or obviously the Wizards, who have two amazing guards. You have the 76ers who have Ben Simmons, who maybe when you play the Sixers, you can actually let Collison play because Collison can guard Simmons because Simmons is no threat to shoot. You know, Simmons can go to the lane, but you got Turner there backing it up at the rim, so maybe that would work. But against the Wizards, it might not work if Wall's healthy and you got Wall and Beal. That dynamic is obviously one of the scariest backcourts in the NBA. Like I said at the beginning of the show, we'll be back again tomorrow on Tuesday with a Warriors preview with a special guest, and then Tony and I will be back together on Wednesday to preview the rest of the week, maybe the rest of the West Coast road swing. We'll see how many games we go in. As always, you can follow the Locked On Pacers podcast at Locked On Pacers on Twitter. Follow me at FreedmanAdam5. Feel free to comment, leave reviews on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever's in this podcast. Leave some reviews. Let us know how we're doing. You can tweet us, let us know how we're doing, whatever you want. And obviously, if you're mad at Tony not being on this podcast, tweet at him, because I tried to get him to be on this one today, so he's not. That's all I got for this Locked On Pacers podcast. Have a great rest. Good night.